Hello, I'm Paul Kearney, a Professor of Politics and Public Policy at University of Stirling, and this is an introduction to a small series of academic articles and blog posts on the topic called How Do Equity Scholars Use Policy Theories? So the background is that I lead a team that studies, we do a sort of qualitative systematic reviews of the literature on equity in different fields. And each time our team wants to know if and how scholars are using policy theories for practical lessons in relation to aims such as equity, justice and fairness. So we were already interested in the wider possibilities of the use of policy theories for practical lessons. You know, so Chris Weibel and I talk about so-called new policy sciences that draws on Lasswell and the idea that policy theories can help inform policy analysis. We had also noticed the instrumental use of policy theories in public health studies. You know, people were interested in the extent to which they could take a theory and use it as a way to influence policy as well as understand it. So what we wanted to know is if we compare the research on equity or equality and fairness, justice and other disciplines or sectors, would we find the same use of policy theories or does it vary each time? So far, we've looked at health, education, gender, and climate change studies. So the aim in this short introduction is to compare what they seek to do and how they use theories to that end. And then that should help you, you know, get a sense of context for reading the individual papers. Okay, so why does it matter? That would be the first question. The so what question. So the first answer is each field identifies the need for transformations in policy and policymaking, or radical and rapid policy change to pursue equity. So for example, in health, scholars talk about improved population health and reduce health inequalities within a country and across the globe. In education, scholars talk about improving educational opportunities and outcomes and reducing inequalities in opportunities and outcomes. In gender mainstreaming research, scholars talk about mainstream gender equality across policy and policymaking. In environmental studies, scholars talk about mitigating and adapting to the climate crisis while securing climate justice. The thing that, apart from a focus on equity or justice, the thing that I think brings each field together in terms of who is writing this stuff and publishing it in academic journals is that they tend to have the same general basic reference point, and that is a problem with so-called neoliberalism. So they want to get away from a neoliberal approach to equity. So generally, they describe neoliberalism as a collection of policy based on the following beliefs: prioritize the economy and economic growth, keep the size of the state low and state intervention low, favour instead using the market or trust the market in relation to economic activity, and assume individual rather than state responsibility for outcomes and the level of equal outcomes. So why would they do that? Well, they would tend to say the current focus on economic growth causes or exacerbates problems such as climate change, as well as social and economic inequalities. So in most cases, researchers in this field want to move towards what we would call a social justice approach to equity. So that would be prioritize fair policy processes and fair outcomes, value the role of the state in redistributing societal costs and benefits, recognize market failures, such as to exacerbate economic inequalities, and foster state responsibility for the systemic or structural causes of inequitable outcomes. So in other words, these outcomes are not caused by simply by individual choices. They're caused by things that are outside of the control of individuals. The second thing these studies have in common is they identify slow and very dispiriting progress towards the transformations they seek. And there are variations in that kind of argument. So for example, governments make a strong rhetorical commitment but fail to deliver. Or governments make a commitment to reducing inequalities but with the wrong vehicle, neoliberalism. or governments commit to many things with equity and justice being the ones that tend to lose out. So the third way of describing that is that these studies tend, or the people that write these studies, they tend to know more about what they seek to achieve and how to do it. Or put another way, they identify their requirements for transformations to policy and policymaking without identifying if they're feasible. Okay, so in that context then, what would practical lessons from policy theories look like? In this context, I think there are three things to expect from policy theory and forum studies. The first is a recognition that major policy change is rare and difficult to predict. So I think most mainstream policy theories describe and try to explain this tendency to find a huge number of small changes and a very small number of huge changes. You know, transformational or radical change might happen, but it's not very common, and it really is not easy to predict. So the question would be, why would you expect transformational change in this case? You know, what would make it particularly special? The second aspect you would expect from theory-informed studies would be the statement that bounded rationality prompts policymakers to ignore most problems and evidence of those problems and reject most ways to interpret them. You put another way, most policymakers ignore most issues and evidence most of the time. So policy theories seek to explain things like the lack of so-called evidence-based policymaking. And they talk about policymakers relying on trusted sources to reduce uncertainty about a problem, and uncertainty is a, you know, a lack of information. And then they talk about policymakers relying on their gut-level instinct or their beliefs to reduce ambiguity, whereas ambiguity describes the fact that there are many different ways to interpret the same policy problem. So the question that that would prompt is, why would policymakers shift their attention to new problems, new sources of evidence and new ways to understand the problem away from a kind of dominant way of understanding it? The third thing you would look for is this sense from policy theories that policymakers operate in a complex policymaking environment of which they have limited knowledge and even less control. So I think the issue there is that a lot of non-theory informed studies focus on what is necessary from policymaking systems. So that what they want is things like high policymaking integration, a bit like if you had a single centre of government making and carrying out a clear decision, or you had many centres collaborating well to produce the right outcomes. Instead, policy studies identify this lack of central control and the lack of an equivalent process to produce coherent, deliverable policies. So what, and so in this case, you wouldn't say, well, what makes this the exception? Because no policy sector would be the exception to that rule. But what instead, what could you feasibly expect from policymaking systems in those contexts? Now, I think policy theories tend to end with, at least when I'm using them, tend to end with cautionary tales to incorporate when using theories. The first is that these theories usually serve to explain rather than overcome obstacles to transformations. So policy, they explain policy incoherence, and they explain the lack of policymaking integration, and they describe them as features rather than bugs of systems. There are things that you adapt to, you don't get rid of. Then they raise dilemmas that are worth considering. So for example, how far would you go to secure the aims you seek? And what are the trade-offs involved? You know, that rather than trying to identify something that is not feasible, identify the kind of the dilemmas involved in the journey towards a transformation. So those are the initial points to bear in mind when you explore each individual study.